on this.
Good afternoon. I don't have a lot to say to introduce this to you, but you did receive a memo from my colleague, Mika Keenan, about the amendments she's been working on to Title IV. Title IV is the city's original art murals code. This is not something that the Design Commission would normally interact with. Original art murals are exempt from design review when they meet the code. I guess there's one thing I just wanted to call your attention to in Mika's memo, and I called attention to it in the memo that I sent to you as well. You may be particularly interested in what Mika has identified as issue number 3, which is going to remove a restriction from the design standards that would allow murals on street-facing walls in the central city regardless of the distance from the sidewalk. And just wanted to maybe prompt that to your attention. And with that, I'll just turn it over to Mika.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Mika Keenan. I'm with the Bureau of Development Services. I'm a code and policy analyst, and I have worked for the city for quite some time, but this is my first time presenting to the Design Commission, so it's really nice to be here today. This is a beautiful room. I am here today with Phil Namony from BPS, and he's in the audience, and he was the original author of Title IV. Peggy Kendallen with the Regional Arts and Culture Council is also here, and I believe somebody from the Portland Street Art Alliance is also here. So these folks were instrumental in getting these murals moving forward and getting them onto BDS's agenda. One other thing I wanted to point out is oftentimes commissions need to make a formal recommendation to City Council. That is not the case with this. These are not land use regulations, so there is no formal recommendation that needs to be made to City Council. We wanted to bring these to you today just to give you an update on where we are. The Design Commission was involved with the original construction and adoption of Title IV, and so we wanted to come back and give you a briefing and an update and let you know where we are with this moving forward, and also to hear any comments and suggestions that you might have, and those will be incorporated into what our final product is. So by way of an agenda, we're going to start off with the code history, and then I'll talk a little bit about the purpose of Title IV, implementation, and then we'll go into the amendments. It's a relatively short presentation. So you'll see that throughout, you're going to see a lot of pictures of murals, and so this doesn't necessarily relate to the amendments themselves. I just thought it would be nice to see some of the work that the artists have done around the city, both through RAC and also through Title IV. So the mural code has a long history, and it actually used to be part of our sign regulations. In 1986, actually, in our sign code was the first code that mentioned murals. So we had a definition in there, and the sign code also exempted murals from needing to go through a permit, which makes sense. And then in 1991, which isn't a date that's on this slide, but in 1991, the city wanted to tighten up that definition and draw a clearer distinction between what is a sign and what is a mural. And then some folks from the sign industry got a hold of that and said, you know, we don't think that it is legal to regulate non-commercial speech from commercial speech. So they also did not think that the city should be able to look at a piece of work to decide which regulation should apply. The courts agreed with that. They said it was in violation of our freedom of speech and said that we were not allowed to regulate murals that way. So the city had to remove that exemption for murals. So in 1998, they were actually considered signs. So anytime a muralist wanted to do a piece in the city, they had to actually get a sign permit. So that wasn't super great. It really cut back on the number of murals that were installed in the city and really limited the opportunities for muralists. So I believe it was under Vera Katz that they started to think about other ways that we could get murals, more murals in the city. So they started working with the Regional Arts and Culture Council under their existing IGA and said, you know, murals really are a public benefit and they're art. We need to provide another avenue for this work to be done in this city. So the Regional Arts and Culture Council adopted murals as part of their public art portfolio and said, okay, we are going to call these public art. They're going to have a review process. The city actually financially supports, provides money to RAC to help with this. And the courts did uphold this. They said, yes, the city is now acting in support of public art and not as a regulator. So we started to be able to see more murals coming through the city as public art. So when that happened, we were able to go back and exempt the sign code and provide another exemption in the sign code, not for murals specifically, but for public art. And then in 2009, we adopted the Title IV, the mural code. So that provided another avenue for muralists in the city. And we'll go into a little bit more about that distinction. But first, I thought I would show this slide, which I think is one of the most beautiful murals that we have in Portland. And this is a RAC-approved mural. And I just want to point out that this was sponsored by APT Art, Awareness and Prevention Through Art. So doing this project, I found this. Peggy had sent me this APT Art, and I went to the Facebook page, and they really do some incredible things all over the world with murals. So if you have a minute on spring break when you're looking through the design requirements, you might want to look at this website too. It's really incredible, some of these things this organization is doing. So we're lucky to have this mural. So the purpose of Title IV is really to allow murals to be permitted separately than sign regulations, for one. And it also provides an option for privately funded murals not intended for the city's art collection. So it's just another way that you can get a smaller scale mural put up in a relatively quick fashion if you want something that's a little smaller. And not going through a big public art process. So this is one of the murals through Title IV, and this is on Southeast Stark Street. So as I mentioned, you cannot review the piece itself to decide which regulations apply. So the code does is set up a set of minimum criteria that you can meet without actually having to view the piece to decide if it's a mural or not. So the current criteria is that the murals have a maximum height of 30 feet. They remain in place for a minimum of 5 years. They're affixed to a building wall. There's special standards that apply in the design overlay zone. There's also a neighborhood posting notification, and this posting notification is really more to let people know that a mural is going into their community. They can't actually vote to not have that mural go in. It's just a way to let the community know about the work. And then it's also important to note that Title IV has a set of administrative rules, and the design piece of it is actually in those administrative rules. I don't really draw too much distinctions here today because they're both being changed, but there's a lot of code requirements in the administrative rules as well. And another piece is that murals are prohibited on buildings containing fewer than 5 dwelling units. So they're not designed to go into residential zones or in single family houses. They're really supposed to be part of the public realm. So a little bit about implementation. I would say we could view this code largely as a success. We've had 49 permits within the past 3 years. One thing that we would like to see is more murals, so we took note of that. I think that everyone who I spoke with found the requirements to be simple. They're pretty clear. They're easy to administer. By all accounts, the code is working well, and so what the amendments are really designed to do is actually loosen up the regulations a bit and provide more opportunities for murals and artists to put their murals in the city. So here's another mural that was permitted through Title IV, and this is on Northeast Alberta. So the amendments were supported by Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fish, also the Regional Arts and Culture Commission, and also the Portland Street Art Alliance. They were instrumental in bringing this conversation to council. I think it was back in 2017. So these are the issues that they saw with the code and ways that we could improve it. And one thing they asked was that we expand the locations where murals can be installed. Currently, they're only allowed on the side of buildings. In association with that, you would change the building owners to property owners. They asked that we allow murals on more street-facing walls in the central city, and that we reduce the length of time that murals must remain in place and create a consistent height measurement. We have height explained in the administrative rules as well as in Title IV, and it can get a little confusing. So we'll go into more details. So the first one is expanding the location where murals can be installed. So we are amending the definition of mural, which is a hand-produced work of visual art which is tiled or painted by hand directly upon or affixed directly to an exterior wall of a building, and we're adding or structure there. So this means that on a private property, you can also install a mural on a fence or a retaining wall or other pieces, other structures on the property. And then there's references throughout the code to building. So every time you see a reference to building, we also say or structure. It was a pretty simple change to reference property owners rather than building owners. So allowing murals on more street-facing walls in Central City. So we're deleting this this piece, which is in the administrative rule. In Central City, within the Central City Plan District, murals are permitted only on non-street-facing walls and street-facing walls that are more than 20 feet from a street lot line. So we're just going to get rid of that piece altogether so that they can go on any street-facing wall in the Central City. And then reducing the length of time that murals must remain in place. And so there was some thought that this is actually reducing the ability for murals to go on buildings for two reasons. One is a building owner might be more reluctant to have a mural installed on their building wall if they knew it had to be there for 5 years. So this is a little bit easier maybe for a building owner to sign up to have a mural on their wall if they know it only needs to be there for 2 years rather than five. And it's also can be challenging to find property owners who will let murals be installed. So there's not a lot of properties you can put these on. So once you have somebody, if you can change that mural out more quickly, then more artists will have opportunities to install murals. And then we want to create a consistent height measurement. So the top of the mural may be no higher than the floor level of the third floor for projects on buildings greater than two stories. So this is in the design district. And then number two is also the minimum size for a mural area is 32 square feet. So we're removing both of those requirements in the design district. The second one is really just because that's not really an issue. That's code that doesn't need to be in place because people aren't really looking to install small murals. And then by removing number one, what that will mean is all murals have to subscribe to the 30-foot requirement that's in Title IV itself. So that will just be consistent across the city. And then there were some other amendments that we identified just kind of going through the process. We decided that we should prohibit some murals. BES did not want to see any murals on stormwater facilities because you could damage the stormwater facility. Materials could leach into it, or just by installing something on a stormwater facility could be problematic. So we did some other cleanup work while we were having our discussions. One is to update the definition of grade to match the Oregon Structural Specialty Code, so it had an outdated definition in there. We also updated the permit inspection process to reflect current practices. So it was originally proposed that there would be an inspection that went along with the mural permit application. The original fee was $250, but then that fee was reduced to $50 so that it wasn't a barrier for artists. But that did not provide enough cost recovery to have an inspection. So what BDS has been doing is the applicant, once the mural is installed, actually sends us a picture of that mural. And that process is working fine. So we take that picture and we put it into track so it's part of the record. So we've updated the administrative rule to reflect that current process. And then we also added a definition for structure. So that definition is the same one that's in Title 33. So just a recap, this was supported by Commissioners Udaly and Fish, the Regional Arts and Culture Council, and the Portland Street Art Allowance. We're expanding locations where murals can be installed. We're allowing them on more street-facing walls in the central city. We're reducing the length of time they must remain in place. We're changing the reference from building owners to property owners, and we're creating a consistent height measurement. So that concludes my presentation, if anybody has questions.
Thank you very much. Commissioners, do you have questions?
I'm not sure I understand the process when a building comes in proposing a wall mural. Is that not in our purview, or a new building, I guess?
Right, yeah, no, I think that this is outside of design guidelines.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the owner may be thinking that when they come in for design review, but that issue would be shelved until they're in for permit review.
We had a recent, actually, design a proposed one.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's, I mean, when it used to be on the side of buildings, you know, there were blank walls on the side of buildings, and the mural was proposed and someone else was going to approve it. Just seems like now that it's in the front of the building, you know, on the right of way, like the image, Micah, that you showed us around a garage door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to review anything more than what we already reviewed. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I guess we can't talk about it because it's an ongoing case. But if someone comes in and says, that's a pretty blank wall. Oh, don't worry about it. We want to put a mural on it.
Yeah, to Sam's point, if the proposed wall mural is not in compliance with our transparency requirements or some other kind of thing, how do we reconcile that? Because we don't want to go and punch a bunch of windows in the middle of a mural or something like that. But I mean, I'm just trying to understand how to.
Yeah, and this treads into rack territory as well with mitigation for not meeting ground floor windows standards. So there is a separate process that rack engages in when ground floor window standards aren't being met. So this is definitely separate from that.
Okay. And I wanted to address Commissioner Rodriguez's comment too. I think when you're looking at a building, you're not looking at whether there's going to be a mural on it or not. If there's a blank wall and that's a problem, then that's the problem.
That's a problem.
The mural is kind of irrelevant because we don't review murals through design review regardless.
Okay, so you're saying is that it has to be approvable independently of
yes.
the mural.
Okay.
Which is, again, we're crossing over into rack territory, but this is what happened with the fair-haired dumbbell. It was approved as a white stucco finish.
Correct.
And we let. Was it considered to be a mural while the painting on it?
No, the fair-haired dumbbell was actually through the public art process, which is a different process than the original art mural process.
But the building had to stand on its own without that colorful skin.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't here for that, so. For that.
I missed that one.
Very feisty discussions.
It would have been too much for me.
So I have a question about the 2-year expiration.
Okay.
So I believe that 2 years, any mural or other application that is made to a building that is designed or intended to last just 2 years is contrary to our guidelines around quality and permanence. And so the question is, what happens at the end of 2 years? Is, you know, a mural allowed to deteriorate? Does it need to be maintained? Is there a check-in at the two-year point to be sure that it's being maintained? If the building owner decides that they don't want to retain it for more than 2 years, are they required to restore the surface to its original condition? You know, what does it look like when that mural sunsets?
So we don't have anything in the code that says at the end of 2 years you need to remove that mural. That's the length of time that it needs to be maintained. There's no requirement in the code for that. I assume that if somebody wanted to remove the mural after the 2 years, that they would just paint over it. There were some questions around graffiti that came up. And so, you know, typically a building owner is the one who's responsible for that maintenance if there's graffiti on the mural, but there's nothing in the code right now for that.
So presumably any type of restoration or improvement would be a complaint driven, move on the building owner's part.
After the 2 year period. Yeah. So the permit doesn't necessarily expire.
Yeah.
Oh. Phil Namini is going to help with that question.
Hi, Phil Namini with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And actually, we don't have any purview over this anymore. But since I was involved in it originally, I did want to point out there is a provision in the administrative rules, which I don't think did change, that does talk about maintenance. So I think as long as the mural's up, they say building owners, and I think we probably changed that to property owners, uh-huh, are responsible for ensuring that a permitted mural is maintained in good condition and repaired in the case of vandalism, yada, yada, yada. It's just the two-year piece is more if they want to remove it or if they want to replace it, they don't have to keep it up for that 5 years.
Okay.
So if you want to replace it in a year, you can't.
Right. I think there's only certain very specific situations, which is, I think the building is sold. So if the new owner says, yes, I don't want that there anymore, okay, or the building or property is substantially remodeled. So if you've put up a mural and then, you know, you're redoing the whole ground floor and busting out a bunch of storefront, that gives the opportunity to.
I might have missed it, but was there some review of content in the mural program, or is it just you put up whatever you want?
It's free speech.
That's the whole point of the Oregon Constitution is, yeah,
you
we're not
able whatever
to,
you want.
Yeah.
It's free speech.
There's some pretty offensive stuff, I guess.
So, and that's why the mural can be commercial. It can be advertising the business as long as it's hand-painted or hand-applied to the surface.
So in this process, the murals don't go through RAC, or do they go through RAC?
This is an alternative to RAC.
Okay.
And so the idea is it allows murals to be kind of negotiated between, say, an artist or and the building owner, and sometimes the community will get involved more on that, but they don't necessarily have to get approval through RAC. You know, RAC has the ability to potentially review content because it becomes part of the city's public art program, which Peggy Kandelin can elaborate if you need it. But in those cases, we're essentially a patron of the arts for that. So that mural is part of the city's art program.
I have a question. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. So anybody can walk in and get a permit to put a mural on a wall? There's no restrictions whatsoever.
The restrictions are, you know, that it meets the definition of the mural, that it's not more than 30 feet high. Okay.
And painted,
size,
blah, blah, blah.
Basically, and 2 year duration.
In fact, the application form, I believe, just shows here's the wall, here's the area where the mural will go. We have had situations in some cases where people complained because the mural was essentially a hand-painted advertisement, but we can't regulate the content. We've also had situations where a mural got put up and the neighborhood objected to the content a little bit, and actually in that case, the building owner went ahead and made some changes.
Okay. It's voluntary though.
Do you know the original thinking behind the 20-foot setback for murals?
Well, Was anybody here when Jeff Joslin was here?
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of this was worked out between some of the mural advocates and Jeff Joslin, who was the in charge of the design team at the time. And I think his main concern was visual clutter close to the street. And so the idea was that if you're in the central city, it could only be on sort of that side-facing wall, or if it was street-facing, it had to be sort of back behind a plaza or something along those lines. We've probably heard more complaints, I think, or people having issues with finding a wall that they thought would work and then running up against that. And once again, because these are just, clear and objective rules, if they can't ask for an adjustment for it. So it's either if they can't meet that, then they have to try to go through RAC, and then it becomes part of this. And if the building owner doesn't necessarily want to have their building be part of the city's public art program, then you kind of don't have any options.
So that might answer my other question. It's you're limiting the mediums in which you're expressing yourself to just paint, and there's a couple of things. Hand painted and something else. But art can be done you can stick things to the wall. You can, so that probably falls more under art than a mural, I guess. Is that the reason why it's hand painted, not necessarily, gigantic collage?
Well, and part of it goes back to this was an ongoing kind of clarification of some of the court cases that originated out of the idea that you can't make code that distinguishes based on content. One of the things that came out when it was readdressed was the idea that you could potentially distinguish based upon the application. But we have to be cautious on that a little bit because, of course, most wall signs are now painted or computer generated vinyl that is stuck on the wall. And so the idea was this idea of saying, well, it's hand applied or hand tiled. And of course, I don't know if we've even had any hand tiled type
murals.
Like
a mosaic? Yeah. Mosaic pattern or
so
something?
You could do a mosaic. I think some of the things that come up that's in the admin rules is depending on how it's applied, you might have to have a structural review of the wall.
Right.
If you had vinyl pieces stuck to the wall, it's vinyl. It's not paint or tile. Is that a possibility? I'm just curious.
Could I offer some illumination?
Sure.
So having the institutional memory of Jeff Joslin, part of a couple things. One, it's called original art murals for a reason,
right?
Meaning that it's not readily printed out and posted on every single corner on every single street selling beer or cigarettes or any other kind of commercial messaging. And so feathered in that, and at the time that we were developing Title IV, was kind of a very nuanced foray into trying to carve out a place for individual, unique, original art to be expressed in the city, which we all wanted. But the constitutionality of free speech and how we regulate it or don't regulate it was tripping us up every step of the way. And so as you were just talking to you and Jessica, you had asked about the 20-foot. But the thinking at the time was, well, a retailer, someone that might abuse this program, which hadn't been launched yet, wouldn't really want to have advertisement 20 feet off the sidewalk edge.
Right.
They wanted at the street. And so it was an effort to carve out an undesirable retail opportunity, meaning commercial messaging of products, but still provide an outlet for muralists. So Stan, I think you're getting at some of the issues of reproducing and then when we created this, there was no such thing as a 3D printer. My point is technology's changed, sign industry has changed, how you apply things to walls have changed, the reproducibility of art or screen art has changed and how you apply it. And so I think this is really us going, okay, it's 2019. Let's tweak. It's done really well. Let's open up some doors. Let's create more opportunities because we're not as concerned as much about that. So that's where some of that came from. You know, why, how do we write a code that this discourages retail advertising, commercial messaging, but doesn't inhibit creativity in artists? So, and that's where it's a delicate dance of regulation. And then we'll find out if we screwed up probably later. And then we'll come back and fix that. But I think right now what we're trying to do is open the door a little bit more than we were. Maybe it was too strict, but in that time, it was very nuanced and risky in that sense.
But because of that, it seems like eliminating the 20-foot rule altogether really opens the door for commercial art. I mean, that's
the one that I have concerns about, but I think what we're trying to do here is how bad is it really? You know, we have exemptions in our sign code for 32 square feet or less from design review. I mean, there's a lot of other permissive ways, and I think that's why we're also building in these safeguards with like 2 years and some of the other steps. We're trying to counter any potential abuse. But what we're hearing is there's a desire to do more, and we want it. It's a tough spot. And Oregon is unique in the way we don't distinguish commercial messaging from original art. So we are kind of creating this rule set just by how the state constitution is structured.
You know, when you and Jeff were working on that, there was more parking lots downtown with side-facing walls.
Yep.
And we're a city that's rapidly losing those parking lots now. So the side-facing wall opportunities are diminishing.
Yep.
That's true.
They did work well, I have to say, because you'd walk up the sidewalk and you'd see it facing you.
Yeah.
That was preferable than walking beside it. And sidewalk seems to me.
Yeah.
And I got to believe with the neighborhood contact requirement that most property owners who choose to install some original artwork are going to be responsive to their neighbors. And if the neighbor is a very sensitive building that objects to the mural for one reason or another, that will be taken into consideration. Seems like there's a little bit of built-in opportunity for pushback for what isn't appropriate.
It's very exciting. I mean, it's really nice that, I mean, it's rare when we get to kind of go back on code that kind of broke some, tried to lay some new rules. So, I mean, I'm very excited about it. I'm channeling Jeff.
So, Mika, are any of these criteria, 30 feet, 5 years, affixed, are any of these adjustable, any of these standards?
No.
Nothing is adjustable?
Nope. They're not land use regulations, so you can't really adjust them.
Does that mean then if a proposal doesn't comply with just exactly this, it then the only path forward is to bump over to RAC and public art?
So if they came in for a permit and it didn't meet
and it didn't meet these standards,
then if correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, but if it doesn't go through Title IV and get a permit or go through RAC, then it is graffiti essentially.
Oh. Ouch. Okay.
Or it's a sign.
Or it's a sign.
The three legal options are original art mural, the RAC public art program, or signs.
Yeah, but if it really is a mural, it really is original artwork. It's 35 feet tall, it's not going to be considered a sign, it's not graffiti. It would then go through a RAC approval process. No other option.
I mean, they could go through the sign program. I mean, they could get a sign permit if it's still within the maximum square footage and things like that.
So sign is very broadly defined.
It has to
be,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question, Ev. Graffiti artist comes in and does something that's 30 feet and it's affixed to the side of a building, it's painted on a building. The only possible one that they wouldn't meet, I don't know what the administrative rules are, but the posting of notification, then it could stay?
Well, they would have to get a permit.
Okay,
it would not be permitted, so somebody could.
But you could do it.
Call in a complaint and say.
Bansky comes in and puts 30 feet, and you decide you want to keep it. You go get a permit, and you can keep it.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to after the fact.
Just curious.
Kind of like a get legal program.
Pretty neat.
Most graffiti artists don't necessarily, or people who encourage sort of a graffiti thing, often want it to be a changing image too. So the two, that's another place where the idea was that the time period would potentially discourage graffiti. I think, and Peggy could probably elaborate on this, I think there have been situations where people have wanted to provide a wall for people to express themselves, and that doesn't really work with our program. I think they've, I don't know if we've had any through RAC that have gone through that, but I think they've explored the idea of trying to use a RAC program to have a revolving series of artwork. But once again, then if it's going through RAC and the commission's reviewing it, they have criteria that they use to judge the merit.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions?
I just have one. My grandkids like to go to Seattle, and their favorite wall is the gum wall. So how would that play into this? Would that be considered a mural, or it's interactive as a type of wall?
It's graffiti.
Pardon?
It's graffiti. 3D.
It's always changing, you know?
3D graffiti.
Yeah. So I need a clarification in terms of freedom of speech. So there was a slide that said, of mural that said, what did it say? Oh, there, no, that one. No, the next one.
Well, that's a little...
No, yes. So radical seed.
Oh, sorry.
So radical seeds. Mm-hmm. So what if somebody came and says, so white supremacist seed? What would happen? Is that considered a hate?
And I'm not sure if the state constitution allows us to regulate printed
so
or
nothing
hate
can
speech.
Be done.
It would be, you would have people out there protesting and, you know,
okay, so
throwing eggs
be,
at
right.
the building or something yeah, along those lines. But you know, one of the more recent situations we had affected this on many levels, but somebody painted a mural on a house, and the house showed kids with wings flying from the St. John's Bridge as it was being painted upon, and they didn't go through the process, but they had an artist working on this as it was being painted on. Somebody interpreted that to be kids jumping off the St. John's Bridge, and so they saw that as being objectionable as far as but all we could really get at was the fact that they painted on a house, and our standards say you can only paint it on, you know, buildings of at least 5 dwelling units, because the idea is it's supposed to be more community serving. So that's where that, you know, is technically not legal, but the image itself was not something we could.
So hateful speeches. It's allowed.
As far as I know, unless if there was something that was directed at a certain individual, they could then sue the person who.
And lewd content, that's not regulated either.
What kind?
Lewd content?
No, I mean, the one that I mentioned where the neighborhood protested was actually a mural that was somewhat related to a cannabis shop. So it had a gorilla in a space suit smoking a bong or something along those lines. And they said, you know, boy, this is, you know, on a safe street, safe route to school. You know, we really don't think that's appropriate. And they had done this without going to permit. But then when they started going through the permit and having the actual neighborhood contact, the owner said, okay, well, we'll keep the gorilla with the space suit, and, you know, instead it's holding a musical instrument or something else. But that was a case where, you know, the neighborhood contact, I think, helped kind of bring that dialogue up.
So in a case like that, if you've already gotten your permit and the neighborhood objects once your mural is up and you decide that you want to change it, do you have to wait to change it for 2 years?
That's possible. I mean, the idea is the neighborhood contact happens before we approve the permit.
And but you don't know the content.
That the neighborhood can ask about.
You don't know the content, right?
We don't as the city, and we can't regulate. But the idea is that the building owner or the artist or the applicant, the neighborhood could be free to ask, well, what is it going to be? And so they can have that dialogue. The person can, the building owner could say, I'm not going to show you. But I think it's probably in their best interest to kind of have that dialogue.
And this is only unique to our Oregon Constitution. Is that what you said, or is it federal?
The Oregon Constitution is incredibly broad on free speech, actually, to almost a libertarian interpretation of free speech.
Hmm. Yeah, and Tracy Reeve is the city attorney that knows all the history about this. But what I've gathered is most of the, like the U.S. Constitution, I think most state constitutions provide an opportunity to distinguish commercial from non-commercial speech. And that distinction is not in the Oregon Constitution.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. It is very exciting, or at least I think it's very exciting, that we will now be able to have murals on street-facing walls that are closer than 20 feet to the street lot line. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Great briefing. I think we're wrapped up with our second item on the agenda. We will take a quick break for a technology changeover in preparation for our design advice request for the DePaul Treatment Center.